Hello, welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider, and joined by co-host Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter at @esider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at @brendankleen14. Make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you're not already, as well, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support of there is very much appreciated. And we're joining you, as always, for our usual home recap episodes. Brendan and I are here live from Talk Stewart Resort Arena. The Suns improved to 5-24, 99-89 over the Dallas Mavericks on TNT in primetime. There's a lot of outside storylines to follow in this game leading into it, but the Suns kind of proved on the court tonight that that didn't really matter. They've improved to 5-24 in the season, won by 10 over Dallas. The second time this year, they won by double digits over Dallas. It seems like the Suns don't have many people's numbers, but they seem like they have Dallas' number.
Yeah, something about this recipe, even without Devin Booker, they match up well. I mean, they limited the Mavericks' key guys, and something just flipped with this team today. And Igor said he knew it would happen, which, like, I don't know how you know that after all these clumsy performances, but really impressive. And it wasn't, you know, there was no luck here. Like, they outplayed them, and it's a really impressive win. I mean, we'll go through it, but a lot of guys really stepped up.
Yeah, a lot of people did. And I guess we start off with the star of the game here pretty easily. It was TJ Warren, season high 30 points on 11 of 17 shooting, 3 of 4 on threes, 5 of 6 from the line. He also chipped in 3 rebounds, 3 assists, so plus 7 as well in the plus-minus category for TJ. So, man, there's not really much to say on TJ at this point. He's just consistent. I know Kellen Wilson tweeted something out during the game. I might be mistaken on the game number here, but I think it's like the last 12 straight games he's scored 15 or more points that he's not been ejected in. And then tonight he adds...
Which is 2.
Yeah, which is... And he's adding in 30 points tonight. And I should have asked Igor about this in the post-game presser, but the added three-point range for TJ Warren this year, it was something that me and you never would have thought would happen, to be honest. I never thought it would happen, but
no.
How much, what does this do for his game now? Because we touched on this, I think, in our trimester report card for TJ. Yeah. This added three-point game is making one of the more underrated scorers in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the areas he was able to affect this game really well was the Mavericks lost him off the ball quite a bit. I mean, Harrison Barnes is a pretty ideal guy if you think about who to defend TJ Warren. Pretty similar size, has the strength to play him physically, but they were losing him consistently. He got a few open threes, and when you're giving him open threes, forget it, you know. Yeah. I mean, he's still kind of getting comfortable, I think, but you definitely can't leave him open. He knocked one down on an and one, fell down to the ground and still nailed it, not even, you know, barely even touched the rim. So just crazy how quickly he's become somebody that not only do you have to respect and guard, but pretty sure thing when he gets the ball open behind the arc.
Yeah, I know this is a little bit off topic here, but I just think it's a question that should be asked here as TJ had a game like this. Long term, if TJ continues to average like 20 points per game this year and on great efficiency from the field next to DeAndre, I know the defense and the rebounds really, really not there with TJ, but I don't know how, like, if he's averaging 20 points per game or averaging a career high in points this year, how he goes to a six-man role next year, because back-to-back years now where TJ's the second-best son.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tough, and figuring out kind of what the forward rotation looks like is going to be interesting. I mean, I do think if we have another 50 games of Jackson, if he gets to a point where he's playable on offense by the end of this season, then, you know, I think a rotation of him, Bridges, and Warren, you can work with that. Maybe it is a situation where you don't feel the need to draft a power forward, you know, like focus in on that position, assuming that they get a point guard somehow in trade. But, you know, it definitely calls into question kind of how you build the roster going forward, because I agree he's demanding heavy minutes and a lot of responsibility, and you can't really, you know, argue with that. He's putting together a career year, and his contract, like we've talked about, is kind of a bargain right now.
Yeah, it looks like a steal. If he's shooting 40% from three throughout those 4 years, that's a major steal for a guy like TJ Warren. But who's your first free throw?
My first free throw is going to be Jamal Crawford, and I think, you know, close the game with a couple key jumpers. Dennis Smith Jr. gave him a little bit of trouble defensively, but altogether, I think, you know, he kind of had whatever he wanted in that fourth quarter, getting to his spots. I mean, he's a guy who's going to nail shots even with six arms in his face.
Yeah,
it doesn't really bother him. But besides that, because I think that's expected, as Igor said after the game, like, you know, if they get the game within reach where he's going to be able to close it out, they feel comfortable that he will. He's done that his whole career. But just going from guy to guy in the locker room, like, it seems like every night we ask players, you know, who keeps you guys together with the losses, and what's the big win and energy burst comes like this, like where is it coming from? And almost every time it's Crawford. So I just think,
which is crazy to say. I just want to point out, this guy was just signed like right before the season, two days before the season started. He's already taken this kind of leadership role.
Yeah, and you know, was either mistreated or had a bad experience to the point in Minnesota that he wanted to leave. It's like, you know, he screwed that up.
Left like $4 million on the table too.
Yeah, because, you know, it's a guy who obviously is making an impact on a young team, which the Timberwolves are as well. So, I mean, I just think that's something that maybe doesn't get talked about a ton with how much I think every day he's hammering into these guys. I think TJ said one of the things he tells the team, Crawford, is think about winning all day. I think, I mean, it's just little stuff like that, because I agree. Like, you know, I can't imagine being in a situation where you're just underperforming every single night, just not doing your job to the best ability. And to have a guy like that who's just going to keep it positive, not an on-the-court thing, didn't have his best game ever tonight, but I think super important on nights like this to remember the impact that he has.
Yeah, Crawford, just really quickly, we had 17 points, 5 assists, only 2 turnovers. He also put in a block shot and a steal, which I don't remember, but it was part of that game. 2 rebounds, also chipped in a plus-minus, plus 13, which is one of the tops on the team. 17 points, like I mentioned, 6-14 from the field. Jamal has been really consistent now. I mean, he's had a bad game here or there, but over the past few weeks, I'd probably say 2.5 weeks, he's been really consistent in his bench role.
Yeah, I think he's kind of embracing that. I think they're finding kind of a bench that makes some sense, and just in time for it to get thrown around a little bit with Booker's return and see how that changes things, potentially an Ariza trade, of course, because stability doesn't really seem to be the calling card for this team this year, but I think that they definitely can count on him to come in and score off the bench. And I mean, you know, it's the little things like that that add up to having legitimate depth. You know, he's not going to change it every game, but to know that you can count on him for 20 minutes and feel pretty comfortable that he's, you know, going to make good decisions. I think 2 turnovers, that's really one of the key things for him, because so many of these other young point guards struggle with that. And, you know, it's not even a consideration for him. He's going to make the smart decision, if nothing else.
Yeah, that's for sure. Crawford, I want a great game tonight alongside TJ. For me, my second free throw is going to be actually someone who's – I'm going to write a story on later this weekend for Bright Side of the Sun, who I've gotten a lot of quotes for, and the team seems to love him. He's, I think, one of the most favorite guys on the team already. Rashawn Holmes, 11 points, 7 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block shot. Play crunch time, too. Only 22 minutes, but he produced that many – in the box score, and 5-7 from the field as well. He continues to maintain his elite efficiency. Rashawn is just a guy who plays the exact same way every time steps on the floor, and that actually matters to this young team.
Yeah, I was impressed today. I thought Dwight Powell might be an interesting matchup for him, because it's kind of a similar player, guy who's bouncy, finishes in the pick and roll really well, can get up and block shots, and you know, he handled that perfectly. I mean, even when he was playing minutes against DeAndre Jordan, was kind of out-hustling him for rebounds, which, you know, if there's anything Jordan's going to do, it's going to be to grab every rebound in sight. And he had 15, but, you know, Holmes making him work, I think, really changed things.
Because he had 12 at halftime, by the way.
Jordan did?
Yeah, so like 3
and Holmes played a lot of the second half. So, you know, maybe that's correlated to plus 16, led the team in plus minus today. That's definitely telling of his performance, his impact today. Got put in with about 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, played the rest of the game. And that's been a trend recently, is Holmes finishing games. The Clippers game, he did it as well. So, I mean, I agree. I think that we hear so much about how energy is a problem, and he's the solution a lot of nights.
Yeah, it's crazy to say with a guy like Rashawn, who's, I think, right now, early odds are that he might be the best Trey Raymond Dunn's ever made. And that's might be a really possibility here. But one question I wanted to ask about Rashawn as well is just his defense. Like we saw tonight, was just crazy as far as his rim protection skills go. Sometimes he had just a possession here or there where he was kind of off as far as switching goes. But Jamal Crawford mentioned in the locker room a guy like Montrezl Harrell, who we ourselves have compared to Rashawn. So is he a guy who's going to be getting a contract like Montrezl got this past summer? You know, he was restricted. Got, I think, $6 million a year.
Yeah.
He's earning himself a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, if Holmes, I think if he's at that level, which I think is pretty, I mean, it's an underpayment for what Harrell's doing this year, but I think that's pretty reasonable for a backup big man that doesn't shoot, you know, doesn't play elite defense. If he's going for that rate, if that's kind of the market, that's, the Suns found a really good player, because getting him locked down on that kind of deal, I think would be, you know, you can count on him going forward. He's young, he's going to grow with this team. I think that, like you said, they really found a piece with that trade. But my second free throw, to move on to that, would, I think it would actually just be the overall defense against the Mavs. I mean, I think Luka is not going to look terrible in the box score. 13, 5, and 6, shot 50% from the field, didn't have his three-point shot going, which maybe will be one of our stats to watch later, the three-point shooting. But and then Harrison Barnes, similarly, just kind of not really very impactful. 15 points, led the Mavs. They only scored 89 tonight. So I just think, you know, forcing them into uncomfortable looks, obviously the three-point luck, you know, that's not necessarily the Suns, like, really controlling that. But there were a lot of possessions. I actually think in the fourth quarter especially, Warren did a pretty good job on Barnes, made him throw up some awkward shot attempts. And aside from, like, you know, a Jalen Brunson shot here or some lucky, you know, offensive rebounds there, the Mavericks really had nothing on offense tonight.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, we'll get into it. Like you said, with our stat to watch, but their three-point percentage was just unreal in a negative way tonight, almost like Houston-esque in the Game 7 of the West Conference Finals last year. But are you surprised? I mean, this is a little off-topic here, but I touched on this during the game with you about Rick Carlisle and his rotations. Do you think Carlisle helped the Suns tonight with keeping with that second unit for as long as they did? I think they stayed on for about 8 minutes of total game time.
Yeah, really weird way that he handled that fourth quarter. And not only did he, you know, keep some of his key guys out until there were about 7 minutes, and it kind of felt like it was almost too late at that point. Suns were winning by 9 or 10.
Yeah.
But he also did it all at once. He did like a full roster substitution, which is just,
shout out Jim Boylan.
Yeah, he pulled a Boylan there, and like, just weird in general, but especially to do it in the fourth quarter, just, yeah, interesting decision. I mean, you're not going to question the guy, but at the same time, I don't think that's something he typically does. No. So just out of form for him, and definitely helped the Suns, because, you know, those backups really didn't stand a chance. It was, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith and Jalen Brunson, just they're not their core players. Is a really weird way to try to get back in this game.
Yeah, that's for sure. I know we have a new sponsor. I know you guys have heard before, but what do you want to tell us about Homie real quick,
Brent? Yeah, just want to bring them up again, tell you guys to go check them out. Not going to do a full read today just because we are doing the live show, but they're really the best new option, taking advantage of, you know, tech and a platform that really is there to support you. They have the licensed team of realtors and attorneys. It's just going to basically kind of smooth out the process. And with our discount code Locked On that you use for everything, it's all one word, the name of the show, Locked On, at homie.com or the Homie mobile app, you're going to save $100 on the $199 listing fee that you'll start with if you're selling a home, and get that down to under $100 to start off. So they're going to support you. They're going to make it cheaper on the front end. And we're really excited to get started with them. So just wanted to remind you guys one more time. You'll be hearing about them for a while. But definitely go check out Homie and use that offer code Locked On. All right, let's go to flagrant fouls, which on a night like this, there's really not a ton. It feels kind of silly to try to pick apart this team that just wowed us, really. But do you have one?
This is tough for me. There's actually a few candidates here for me. Even though, like you said, it was a good night for the Suns. DeAndre Ayton, I was thinking very heavily about putting DA in this category, but I'm actually going to go with a guy who we've been standing for the past few weeks, who's DeAnthony Melton. 0-4 from the field. Even though, by the way, 3 steals and 2 blocks, that guy's usage as far as defense goes translated right to the pros, which is crazy to say. But 0 points, 0-4 from the field, 0-2 on threes. He only had 1 assist to 3 turnovers. He created little to no separation that against guys like Dennis Smith Jr. and Jalen Brunson. He was really struggling, especially Devin Harris as well, too. This is one of those off nights for Melton.
Yeah, I think, maybe it's just kind of the playing time and just information overload catching up to him. Maybe it's just an off night, nothing where he really, threw away the game. Not like, terrible. And I think Igor kind of saw it like all of us did. And he only played 21 minutes. Like we said, Crawford finished out the game, played most of the fourth quarter. So yeah, just a weird one for him, and kind of not like you were too worried about it. Kind of happened with Mikhail a little while ago, but maybe it's good again, like I've said a couple times now, to get these jitters and weird games out of the way so that when Booker comes back, everybody's kind of in rhythm.
What's good though, before we go into your flagrant foul, Brent, is that, like I mentioned just a few moments ago, Melton's defensive ability from USC translated immediately, and like I said, 3 steals, 2 blocks in 21 minutes for a guy who's 6'4".
Yeah, it's really impressive, and I think, the fact that he was able to compete with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on Monday and a quicker guard like Dennis Smith Jr. tonight, just the versatility there, even just within the point guard position, not to mention the switching that he kind of allows the Suns to do, is just really impressive. But my flagrant foul, I think, I will mention Ayton just because I think it needs to be kind of brought up. Just not a super strong game from him. Very aggressive. I think he showed some progress there, like he has this whole week, this three games this week, of, you know, putting his shoulder down, really trying to draw contact, make shots easier for him, even though it might be a little more physically demanding. But, you know, 3 of 13, wasn't able to be effective enough to play crunch time. Struggled a little bit against DeAndre Jordan. I think he played him a little better than the first matchup that they had, but not, you know, obviously not well enough to stay on the court, like I said. So, again, like Melton, kind of not a disaster of a performance, but probably one of the weak links in a team where there weren't a lot.
He struggled against Dwight Powell, too, in the second unit, but we touched on this off the air during the game, but I wanted to bring this up on the air because I know so many fans were like, DeAndre's like Superman. Like, he's going to be the guy that's jumping over folks. He's going to be like Josh Jackson in the big man's body. Mm-hmm. But we saw tonight a few occasions where if those expectations were reality, it would have happened, but we both know that DeAndre is not that kind of guy. He's shown up through 30 games already that he's not a guy who's going to explode through and scream in someone's face after a dunk. He's just not like that. And what do you think just overall about that point there? Because I think it's something that Suns fans believe, but it's if it's not in his arsenal now, it's a few years away.
Yeah, it's not. It's just not what he's comfortable doing. I mean, you think about even, you know, I'm sure a lot of us watched him at Arizona, even just as fans or, you know, Pac-12 watchers. Just never been the way he plays basketball. So I think the expectation of doing that, obviously there's some stuff that kind of changes when you get to the NBA, and he's been more of a pick and roll player. We've already seen a lot of those changes, but, you know, as far as just like kind of what a guy's comfortable doing, I think it's unrealistic to think that he's going to turn into, you know, Shaq or Alonzo Mourning overnight, just some vicious physical player. It, you know, I think ideally that's probably not what he would even be doing when he's at his best. You know, he's going to be shooting more, he's going to be a finesse player, and obviously going to add that physicality as well. But I agree, it's probably unrealistic to assume that at this point, that it's just kind of spring up out of nowhere.
Yeah, 3 of 13, just want to mention that again, because I believe that is DeAndre's worst shooting night of his career so far. -6 in the plus-minus category. Also had 4 turnovers to 1 assist tonight, so the passing wasn't there for him. But let's move on to our stat to watch here, our final segment. I think we both are in agreement on Dallas. We should just head on them for a stat to watch, especially the three-pointer. I'll pass to you because I know you wanted to hit on that as well. I'll find a stat to watch as well while I'm looking here. But that Dallas, just the three-point shooting there, 5 of 33, that's just unreal, 15.2%. What do you think about that tonight?
It's really just kind of crazy. I mean, getting a lot of open looks between Wesley Matthews, Harrison Barnes, even Dwight Powell had an open one in the fourth quarter that Ayton didn't get out to contest, that didn't go in. So kind of crazy to watch a game like that where, you know, it's almost like, what do you even do if you're Rick Carlisle and the Mavs at that point? Kind of like we saw, like you said, with the Rockets in last year's game 7, just uncharacteristically bad performance. But at the same time, the Suns have seen this before. It's kind of what happened with the Bucks, with Brook Lopez going 0 for 12 from 3. So the Suns will take it, but, you know, in a 10-point game when they miss 28 threes, probably looks a lot different if they're even close to what they should have been. So if they even shoot, you know, 33%, make 11 of them, that's 18 extra points, and the game looks a lot different.
Really quickly, this is just a bonus stat to watch here, just because I'm only going to spend seconds on this, but the Suns shot 37% from 3. The Mavs, like you mentioned, Brandon, shot 15.2%. If the Mavs shot 37% from 3 tonight, they would have won this game. But for my stat to watch, actually be back on the Dallas side of things, and it's their assist turnover ratio, an area that I've consistently touched on with the Suns this year when they're on and when they're not. And tonight that was especially the case with Dallas. 14 assists to 23 turnovers. I think that might be one of the worst turnover ratios for a Carlisle team this year.
Yeah, it's like, I, you know, similar to the three-point shooting, just super uncharacteristic. This is an efficient, kind of methodical offense that just creates open shots easily, even though they play non-traditionally with a bunch of small guards and everything, and just, you know, out of sorts offense. We haven't mentioned they were on the second end of a back-to-back tonight, so a lot of this stuff, maybe you kind of chalk it up to that, didn't have their legs under them, were just making boneheaded decisions. Some of the rotation stuff maybe plays in there too, but you know, the Suns will take it, like we said. Obviously, like, 5-24 team, they'll take a win any way they can get it. They were screaming and cheering in the locker room, we could overhear from the press conference room. So you know, I think carry the momentum. It seems like Booker's coming back soon, and you know, hopefully it carries on and they can put some wins together on the road trip coming up.
All right, that'll be it for today's episode, folks. 99-89 was the final score. Like Brendan mentioned there, the Suns are now 5-24 in the season. They play Minnesota on Saturday. We'll see if they keep this momentum going. But until then, guys, we'll talk to you later.